Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Abortionist George Tiller is the most recent and notorious of the four abortionists killed in the U.S. after Barnett Slepian, John Britton, and David Gunn. Of course, God has granted everyone the right of self-defense to use an escalation of force up to lethal action to protect oneself and one's neighbor from unjust, imminent harm. Isn't that true? Don't we have the right of self-defense to use even lethal force to stop someone from killing us or from killing a neighbor? And of course, abortionists have unjustly slaughtered countless innocent children. Yet, I do not condone the murder of George Tiller, but I am thankful that he will never kill another child. I do not condone the murder of George Tiller. It is a murder. And I am also thankful that he will never kill another child. The typical abortionist kills more than four people by lunchtime. The typical abortionist. Yet the vigilantes who killed these four abortionists were unjustified. How can that be? Well, we can talk through that on this program and perhaps a follow-up later in the week online at kgovkgov.com or on this 50,000-watt AM 670 KLTT. But we could talk through the principles, the biblical principles, which establish the right of self-defense and at the same time condemn vigilantes and those who would kill abortionists. Jesus observed that those who live by violence will perish by violence. That's in Matthew chapter 26. And the New Testament further states, he who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. And by the way, that command is described in the same verse as, quote, the faith of the saints, unquote. That's in Revelation chapter 13. So widespread injustice like slavery, the Holocaust, and abortion undermine the tranquility that societies and even the perpetrators desire. Isn't that something? Those who own slaves, they wanted tranquility. They didn't want their lives torn apart by the battle over the injustice of owning another man. Those who perpetuated the Holocaust, they wanted to go home after working in the concentration camp for the day. They wanted to go home and have a nice, peaceful dinner with their wife and kids. That's what they wanted. They didn't want their lives, their towns, their nation torn to shreds. And those who dismember unborn children, they want to live with tranquility. But violence begets violence. And so these crimes against humanity bring about predictable eruptions of violence. Predictable. So the murderer in this case is 51-year-old Scott Roeder, who shot to death late-term abortionist George Tiller. And they picked him up. The police took him into custody 170 miles away from Wichita in a Kansas City suburb a few hours after the shooting. Now, Barack Obama has said that he is shocked. I seem to recall that he never mentioned a word about the pastor who was murdered while preaching. Talk about being killed while going to church. Remember the pastor who was murdered while preaching? The bullet even went through his Bible. I don't seem to remember Barack Obama saying anything about that, but he's shocked that a child killer would be killed by a predictable eruption of violence during times of widespread injustice. By the way, and I think this is a minor point, but all four abortionists who were killed, they were killed during the years when the most aggressively pro-abortion candidate was in the White House, right? During the Clinton years, 1993, 94, and 98, that was Slepian, Britton, and David Gunn. And now with Obama in 2009, George Tiller. And why would that be? as you promote and defend widespread injustice, you will have predictable eruptions of violence, even if it's unjust. Do you remember Henry Greenspan? You remember Henry Greenspan? No, not the chairman of the Federal Reserve. That was Alan Greenspan. Henry, or Hirsch Greenspan, was the Jewish teenager who shot to death a German diplomat. Actually, he was a Nazi diplomat, Ernst von Rath. You see, Hirsch's parents were murdered by the Nazis in Germany. And he was so angry, and understandably so, he got a gun and he walked to the German embassy in Paris and he shot the first man he saw who happened to be a Nazi official named Ernst von Rath. And you know what happened as a consequence of that? It triggered a supposedly, quote, spontaneous uprising against the Jews, which we call Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass, and which Hitler gave the order to mass arrest the Jews. Far more than 10,000 Jews were arrested. 91 were murdered. Dozens of synagogues were torched, and countless Jewish places of business, shops, their front windows were broken and their property was destroyed. And of course, that had been planned all along, but the popular anger at this Jewish teenager for killing this Nazi diplomat actually empowered Hitler to order Kristallnacht. It actually did that. So you have to be careful when you're one of the populist crowd that professes indignation at a murderer who is then murdered. Now, how would I spin this if I were a liberal? If I were a typical liberal, if I were a liar like most candidates, most political candidates, what would I say about George Tiller being murdered? Well, if I were like a liberal, I would say, I am personally against killing abortionists, but who am I to impose my morality on others? That's what I would say if I were a hypocrite like a liberal. They are hypocrite liars. When a politician says, I am personally pro-choice, what that means is he is officially supportive of killing innocent children. So if I were disingenuous about a matter of life and death, like a liberal is, like most candidates are, I would say, I am personally against killing abortionists, but who am I to impose my morality on others? Right? That's what I would say. If I were a hypocrite, disingenuous, like Planned Parenthood, I would say, well, I'm working to decrease the number of abortionists who are killed. That's what I would say. Couldn't you join me in working to decrease the number of abortionists who are killed? Killing abortionists should be safe, legal, and rare. That's if I were a hypocrite, liar, liberal, like the opposition. But I'm not. I'm a Christian. And so I'm not disingenuous. If I were a liberal, if I were disingenuous, if I were a liar, then I would say, this is not murder. This is just a very late-term abortion. That's it. If I were disingenuous, if I were a liar like those who are pro-choice, I would deny what it is. I would use a euphemism. I would say, hey, when George Tiller was killed, that's not murder. That is simply a very late-term abortion. If I am disingenuous, I'm violating the standard of truth and integrity that Jesus Christ presented. So I could be condemned if I'm disingenuous. In an immoral way, I can be condemned by the standard of Jesus Christ. If a liberal is a liar, is a hypocrite, is disingenuous, he cannot be condemned by the standard he proposes, which is godless atheistic evolution. Survival of the fittest, the strong can kill the weak. We all come from atoms and molecules and animals and slime. One animal can eat another animal. A fish eats another fish with no moral consequence. A liberal can't be condemned on the godless foundation that they promote. But we Christians, We could either be justified or condemned in an action or in a statement based on the standard that Jesus Christ presented to us. If child killing were not legal, George Tiller would not be dead. If premarital sex and extramarital sex were not legal, 10,000 murder victims with adultery as a factor would not be dead. You know, liberals say if it saves one life, it's worth it. They're such liars. They're such liars. So, I do not condone the murder of George Tiller. You're listening to Bob and Yart Live. I have the honor of being the pastor of Denver Bible Church. And I do not condone the murder of George Tiller. But I am thankful that he will never kill another child. Now, I also happen to be a spokesman for Colorado Right to Life. And Nine News was here a few hours ago at our studio. And they did an interview, and they took a somewhat unprecedented step, undoubtedly because they think it will make right-to-lifers look bad, but they took the unprecedented step of not airing the answers to the questions. They put on their website the entire raw footage from when the camera started rolling to when the camera was turned off. And so what we're going to do is play you the audio off of Nine News website. And everything said, of course, and I'm thankful to God, everything said is valid, true, defensible, justifiable, important. But I think that they think that by showing the raw footage, that they will put us in the worst light. And of course, that's what they'd like to do. Even the media and the public that are pro-choice cringe at a late-term abortionist like Warren Hearn. Even pro-choice Bill O'Reilly on Fox News, the O'Reilly Factor, you know that Bill O'Reilly is pro-choice, right? He advocates the right to kill children. He just thinks you should be responsible and kill them younger in the earlier months rather in the later months. So Bill O'Reilly is pro-choice. He's a pro-abort. He's a child killer. But even late-term abortion even creeps out Bill O'Reilly. So he'll call George Tiller a baby killer. And, of course, he'll be blamed for this murder. But what I'd like to do is let you hear the audio off of the Nine News website. The only thing we did was took out some of the silence when the camera's on me for 25 seconds, just waiting for the reporter to think of another question. And some of the audio you won't be able to hear real well because it's raw footage and the reporter wasn't even mic'd. So they were going to dub that in back at the studio, but they just put up the whole video. So let's play the audio portion from 9news.com today.
Okay, what does the Colorado Right to Life have to say about Dr. Tiller's death?
Colorado Right to Life does not condone the murder of George Tiller, but we are thankful that he will never again be able to kill a child.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. This morning on our air, we brought in a Dr. Hearn.
Warren Hearn. I've interviewed him on this radio show. We do broadcasting here every day for 18 years.
He's very, he's grieving very much so, as is a lot of people. But he said, this is not the act of a singular, this is not the singular act of a lone gunman. This is the result of 35 years of intensive and relentless harassment and intimidation and violence from the anti-abortion movement. It was really a face of fascism in America. What do you think?
Of course, abortionists want to tarnish a pro-life movement with the unjust actions of a few, but a teenage Jewish boy killed a German diplomat, a Nazi, and that gave the German people their excuse for Kristallnacht. So you don't tarnish an entire group of people because of the crimes of a few.
Okay. Let me just check my finger. I'll ask you another question, and it's roughly in the same lines as that.
Will, is that point valid?
He says, Dr. Hearn said, quote, "The only real difference between the American anti-abortion movement and the Taliban is 8,000 miles.
Yep.
Quote, we do not have to invade other countries to find terrorists. They are right here killing abortion doctors. We've been under this kind of threat for the last 35 years. Again, I guess.
The pro-life movement speaks with one voice against vigilantism and murder, yet abortionists would like to tarnish millions of people with the unjust actions of a few. They kill unborn children. It's not a surprise that they would be bigoted in that sense against all those who try to protect children.
That's a very fair statement.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and that was it. At one point, I asked Will Duffy, who was in the studio. Will is the founder of the Collaborators Project. Is that point valid? I meant to ask, is that point clear? And after the interview, he told me he thought too many people would lack the historical context to know what Kristallnacht is. They just wouldn't know the night of the broken glass from the history of World War II and Germany and Nazism. And that's a good point. Sadly, our schools have failed us on educating even in significant recent history. But that was the interview, and Nine News apparently believes that putting up the raw video will make us look bad. I'm sitting there, like I said, we took out the dead air. If I'm sitting for 30 seconds while the reporter's thinking up a question, they have the camera focused on my face, just wondering what the next question will be. And so you could look at that video at Nine News, and they undoubtedly will use some of that in their reporting here in Colorado. The president of Colorado Right to Life, Joe Riccobono, was rushing in from his workplace to do an interview, and he managed to get to the Colorado Right to Life office in time. That's at a block from the Capitol, downtown Denver, a half a block, a couple doors from the Capitol. And he did the interview with Channel 7 News, which should air this evening on their evening news. That's Channel 7, Joe Riccobono, president of Colorado Right to Life. We have, for a long time, thought through the principles involved in self-defense and the right given to us by God, the authority given to us by God to use force in an escalation of force up to lethal force in the exercise of self-defense, which includes defending a neighbor. Jesus said, who is your neighbor? Anybody's your neighbor. You're there or you know about them. So if somebody's in a park and they're trying to kill a child, you have the authority from God, and even our government recognizes this, and you could use force to intervene to save that child's life. Now, when governments become hostile to the God-given right to life, as America was saying that you could own blacks, you could beat blacks, you could rob them of their right to liberty, and in some cases, their right to life. When a government becomes hostile to those fundamental rights, as Germany was against the right to life of Jews, then if you try to intervene, they will arrest you. They will arrest you for trying to stop a Jew from being killed, and in Germany, they'd probably kill you along with the Jew that you were trying to save. And in America, they would arrest you for trying to bring a black to freedom if you were part of the mostly Christian Underground Railroad. If you were a Christian like William Wilberforce in England, you would be hated by those around you because you keep bringing up the plight of blacks who are unjustly robbed of their liberty. If you were a Christian like Dietrich Bonhoeffer in Germany, you would be alienated by the Christians around you because you're too radical and you're too outspoken against the German government. And today he's recognized as a hero, but at the time he was an outcast by the Christian churches that he was a part of. And so being judged by God and being judged in the light of history is way more significant than being judged by your peers. But when there is injustice, widespread injustice, you have a predictable eruption of violence. It is predictable. And so what are the principles? God has given us the authority and the power to exercise self-defense, including the use of lethal force, to protect ourselves or our neighbor from being killed. Now, in giving us that authority, there are two key factors. The threat has to be imminent, an imminent and irreversible threat of harm. Like someone is ready to severely assault your child or kill you or kill your wife. It has to be an imminent threat of serious harm, and you need to exercise an escalation of force. You are not allowed to jump right to killing someone in order to stop an imminent threat of harm. Can't do that. So God provides that principle in Scripture when he teaches us that if someone, a criminal who is invading a home, he's a burglar, if he is killed by the homeowner, there's a different understanding of that. For example, if it's nighttime versus daytime. Now, the Bible provides legal principles, sometimes in very encapsulated, brief accounts. In just a very few words, it provides extensive concepts like an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. In other words, the punishment should fit the crime. And so in this case of the escalation of force, it's given in the context, God speaks in the context of if the home invader, the burglar, comes in at night when it's dark and you're in your home versus when he comes in the daytime and you may be at work. And so think about the difference there. And God points out in the one circumstance, if you kill him, you're justified. In the other, you are not. And for example, if a neighborhood punk comes into your home during the day and he grabs your wallet off the kitchen table and he's running out the back door and you take a gun you have nearby and you shoot him in the back and kill him, is that justified? No, it's not justified. That is homicide. You've used an unnecessary level of force. Your life was not put at risk. Yes, your home was invaded. You might have a hard time sleeping that night. Your wife, your kids might be scared to death, but it was wrong for you to kill that child, that teenager, even if it was an adult. On the other hand, let's say it's nighttime and you and your wife are in bed asleep and your kids are next door down the hall in their bedrooms asleep and you realize there is someone in your home. You have a hard time seeing who it is. But you realize there is an invader, there's a threat to you and your family, and you pick up a bat and you swing it and hit him in the head and kill him. Are you guilty of murder? No, you're not guilty because you can't assess the extent of the threat and you are using reasonable force in that circumstance to protect yourself and your family. And so God expects that we would use an escalation of force in order to prevent a crime for the exercise of self-defense. And he also expects that the harm we would be preventing would be imminent. In other words, if somebody says to me, I hate you, and next year when I get out of jail, I'm going to kill you, I don't have the right then to kill him because that threat is future. If somebody says, on Monday, I'm going to come and kill you, I don't have the right then to kill that person. I have to go to the government. And if the government is negligent and they don't intervene, they say, well, there's nothing we can do. It's only a threat, which the government, of course, is often incompetent. I still don't have the authority to kill him. According to the principles revealed in God's word, I only have the authority to prevent an imminent threat of harm, and I have to use an escalation of force to do so. I don't have carte blanche to kill someone who's planning to commit a crime in the future, no matter how certain I am that it's coming. As an individual, God has given greater latitude and authority to governments to use force, including up to lethal force, to apprehend suspects and to execute convicted criminals and to conduct just warfare. God has given governments a greater latitude and authority to use lethal force than he's given to individuals. And if you think we'd be better off if individuals, if you think that God was wrong in the way he has orchestrated this authority and that the world would be better off if individuals had greater authority than the government and every individual could decide who should be killed and who should not be killed, then I think you're simply not thinking it through. How much time have you spent thinking through that issue? Because that would lead toward anarchy. If governments had no authority to overrule individuals who decided who should live and who should die, that would lead to anarchy. And so God weighed these trade-offs. And God decided to give governments that greater latitude of self-defense. If the government fails to execute a convicted murderer, do I, as an individual, have the right to go and kill him? No, I don't. If the government fails to convict a murderer, an obvious murderer, like O.J. Simpson, do I have the right to go and kill him? No, I don't. God, in his wisdom, has withheld that kind of authority. God could have authorized individuals to take up the power of execution in their own hands. God could have granted that authority, but he did not. In his wisdom, he knew that that would lead to greater anarchy and mayhem and bloodshed. So he has delegated authority to individuals to use self-defense, but it requires these two crucial factors. The harm has to be imminent, and you have to use an escalation of force. So if you're in China and you're restrained in the abortion room, and they're about to kill your own child, guess what? You would have the authority to use force, up to lethal force, to defend your child in that room right then and there. But you do not have the authority. No one has the authority to become a vigilante and to kill abortionists because the government's not doing its job. And knowing the truth of God's word and promoting it is the best weapon we have to fight and eventually win this war against the slaughter of children. So please let others know about the broadcast here at Bob and Yart Live. You could send them an email, suggest they tune in to KGov, KGOV.com, our phone number 1-800-8-NYART. You could order our Bible study albums, our DVDs, and my life's work, The Plot, an Overview of the Bible, 1-800-8-NYART. And in Arvada, Maranatha, what a great school. That's Maranatha.